Okay, it is now 10 o'clock. According to Sprint, it is now 10 o'clock. So it is time to start. Step on in. Let's kick off with a prayer. And Father, thank you so much for your kingdom, for your grace. Father, for your son. We'll be looking at a section of his life today, Father, as he lived on earth and as he journeyed to Jerusalem. Father, help us to learn from that. Help us to live lives as worthy as we can, and help us to embrace the grace that we need to fill the gap. Father, thank you for the hearts of each person here today, each one who is traveling still to be here. Father, help us all to give the glory to you. It's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Okay. The slide you would be looking at right now says, on to Jerusalem. Okay, let's go back. There we go. So, last week we had talked about some of the miracles of Jesus, some of the things going on, some of the stuff happening. And what we're picking up this week in the book of Mark, Mark chapters 9 and 10, and we're looking at Jesus and his journey to Jerusalem. So there are a couple of layers to the journey to Jerusalem, and I really want to talk about those this morning. I want us to think about those. So, mission and preparation, or a very spiritual journey. So for Jesus, this walk from north of the Sea of Galilee down to Jerusalem was him setting his mind and his heart on knowing where he was going to go. He was walking to his death. He was walking towards being tortured, being killed, and of course being raised again. And for his disciples, for the apostles walking with him, this was a journey of a lifetime. This is the training opportunity of a lifetime. Jesus is working with them spiritually to train them to be ready for his death. He needs them to believe. He needs them to carry the message. And so we'll see that as we walk through chapters 9 and 10. And that's what we're trying to understand. I want us each to get our minds wrapped around that idea of the spiritual journey. I'm not very good at imagining myself as Jesus. I don't understand God well enough to do that, right? But I can imagine myself as one of the apostles. I'm walking along with Jesus. He's working miracles. He's doing amazing things. What am I supposed to learn? So let's look at this journey. So first, last week, we'll go ahead and populate that. Thank you to Bill. Bill Francis taught us out of Mark's chapter 7, 8. So we picked up part of 9 there. Jesus had traveled north of Galilee. So he was working a lot of miracles. We saw that. He was healing people. He fed the 4,000 and he fed the 5,000. We had the comparison of those two feed the hungry kind of opportunities there. But throughout that, we and the apostles, of course, in person, are reminded of the power of Jesus. If you recall, the Pharisees asked for a sign, and he said, come on, guys. If you're not picking it up now, we're not giving you another sign, right? And the apostles didn't understand his power. He started talking about the leaven of the church, and the leaven leavens the whole lump, and his spiritual message, and they're all worried about, do we have bread? Are we going to be hungry? It's like, do you not get it? I just fed 5,000 people, then I fed 4,000 people, and you're worried about bread? So they still didn't get the power of Jesus. And it's in that context that I think this spiritual journey happens. So join me, if you will, in the discipling time of a lifetime. Let's walk along with Jesus as he travels to Jerusalem. He's training the apostles to be ready for what's going to happen in Jerusalem, for the Passion Week, as we call it now, right? And this is an amazing thing. So this week was kind of walking along with Jesus on this, saying, what should I be learning? Now, these people don't know the end of the story. Jesus tells them, he's already told them once in chapter 8, he's going to tell them again about resurrection, but they don't really believe it. We know that because Peter rebuked Jesus the first time he talked about it, right? So last week, Bill ended up with the Mount of Transfiguration, right? And that's kind of a very clear statement that Jesus has the power. He's more important than those old prophets that you honor so much. He's more important than Moses. That's pretty crazy. But that's true. And the gang had trouble getting that. I think they understood it. You know, they're not disrespecting Jesus at that level. But it's kind of hard to believe that when you've grown up your whole life honoring Moses, honoring the prophets. So, this is a journey of preparation for the apostles, and Jesus is a man on a mission. He's going to get to Jerusalem for the Passover. So they're heading south, right? So does the laser thing work here? Let's see. Ah, yes, very cool. I'll figure out the technology one day, because in theory I work in technology. Okay, so Jesus has been all the way up at Caesarea Philippi, and he resolutely set out for Jerusalem. The word resolutely is in Luke, unfortunately. I couldn't steal that for Mark, but it's still there. But he set his face on, I got to get to Jerusalem. That's where I'm headed. Y'all come with me. Okay? And so during what we're reading today, he's working his way down this journey from Caesarea Philippi into the Galilee area, on across the Transjordan there, across the Jordan, and then back in the final roads past Jericho and up to the edge of Jerusalem. Next week we'll pick up with entering Jerusalem. And I believe, after reading this week, that if he hadn't made that spiritual journey, that amazing discipling time, if you will, for the apostles, things would not have gone even as well as they did in Jerusalem. You think about the week of the crucifixion, the Passion Week. What happened? The apostles fled and hid. Peter lied, right? And that's after a week, this journey of preparation. That's how they behaved. They might never have come back if Jesus hadn't been really working on them. So he's teaching them. He's preparing them for where they need to be. So this is the big journey. So y'all with me? Ready to walk with these guys? Scale of miles. 20 miles is that little bit down there. So as the crow flies, this looks like about an 80 or 100 mile journey. I didn't go look it up. As they walked, it was probably more like 200 miles wandering around. This is a long journey. Okay? I wear my Fitbit. On a really, really good day, I might walk 8 or 10 miles, right? If you're purposefully journeying, maybe you can cover 10 or 15 miles, but it's not exactly easy roads. And for some reason, Jesus didn't have a car. I don't know why not. So, should have rented a minivan. They could have all gotten there. Anyway, so they're trying to get there. But Jesus is not regretting that journey time. He's using that journey time. So I firmly believe that this was all very thought out, very intentional. So let's go on that journey. What would it take for you to be ready to see your leader, your teacher, your rabbi crucified? What would it take? I was thinking about that this week. I think I would have been a pretty big failure as an apostle. Okay? I think I'd have been running and hiding. I doubt I'd have even had as much courage as my namesake, Peter. Because at least he stayed nearby and then lied. I'd have probably been with the other guys hiding somewhere far away. Right? What would it take to prepare your mind as you're walking with this guy you've been following for a few years and say, okay, he's going to die. He's going to get arrested. All appearances are he's going to lose and lose big. Okay? This is not going to be a good day for him. And the apostles are going to scatter and we're going to, you know, it's a terrible thing. Think about that journey. So Jesus prepared his apostles. And I see two main things he's doing. One is on-the-job training. You all done OJT, on-the-job training? You ever done that at your work? Here's the stuff you got to do. Go figure it out. Ask some questions if you need to. Get it done. Right? In some ways, that is the best training, right? You learn how to deal with things because you lived it, you walked it, you were there. But he also does some teaching, and some of his teaching is, frankly, just crazy challenging. Some of the things we'll be looking at, some of these lessons, are still very challenging for us today. They're not the natural way of learning how to do things. But Jesus is teaching. Okay? So let's look at both of these. We'll start with the on-the-job training. So in Mark 9:14, which is where I officially pick up, okay, they're just off the Mount of Transfiguration. The guys are all saying, oh, wow, this is cool. Jesus appeared with Moses, appeared with Elijah. We're going to build three tabernacles. Well, maybe not. Okay, we're going to build one. No, we're just going to honor Jesus because he's the king. He's the Lord. Okay? So here he's healing a boy with an unclean spirit. Disciples failed. They couldn't cure him. Okay? On-the-job training. Is that what I said? Yeah. How many of us have ever done something wrong at work? And for anyone who did not raise your hands, either you've never worked or you're a liar. Okay? So, choose one, right? Okay? My question at work typically is not, have I done something wrong, but how many wrong things have I done today? Right? That's where we are. We're human. It happens. But these guys failed. We couldn't cure them. So Jesus finds a teaching moment, and he says, hey, of course you couldn't. You're a faithless generation. Yeah. So, okay. So we read that, and he says, very specifically, oh, it's good on the screen here. Did someone just unplug this? You got it? Okay. Gotta figure it out. Maybe. Maybe not. Okay. Something happened. And a darkness came over the land. No, okay. So, okay. So I'll use the big screen. Okay. So because of your little faith, you couldn't heal this boy. Okay? So it's a teaching moment. And so Jesus then goes ahead with the healing. And he heals this boy. And the healing itself is this violent eruption as the unclean spirit comes out of the boy. And then he lies there as if dead. It's just everything taken out. You've killed him. He's died. And Jesus takes him by the hand and lifts him up and he's fine. And he's healed. Okay? So, his teaching moment, in verse 29, Jesus says, you got to pray. Okay? You can't just go lay hands on this kid. This kind cannot be driven out by anything but prayer. Okay? So there's the on-the-job training. We tried to heal him, but we apparently didn't stop and pray for this boy. I don't know what they tried. I don't know how it worked. But they blew it. Jesus called them faithless, but the faithless turns out to be you didn't pray. It's about God. Maybe this was a pride issue. Maybe they thought we have these healing powers so we can go heal. And they were kind of leaving God out of the picture. What do you think? Maybe. So my question at the bottom there, kind of obscured by Jerome's piano set up there, sorry. But to read that, it's how's your prayer for the sick going these days? We have a lot of sick people in our congregation. You have sick people in your family. You have people who are struggling with physical problems. Do you believe and are you praying for them? Or do you just accept it? Yeah, that's how it is. They'll overcome it. They'll deal with it. When you say you're going to pray for somebody, do you really go and make an effort? Do you talk to God? Or could Jesus say, unbelieving generation? You say it, but you're not really believing it when you do it. Okay? So think about that. You know, I don't think anyone in this room has miraculous healing powers in the sense that the gifts of the Spirit that were passed on by the apostles laying on of hands. If you've met an apostle, please raise it. Anyway, no. So we don't have that. But you know what? We still got prayer. And you've got to believe in the prayer. And prayer does things. It changes things. Sometimes not on the timetable that you want it to be. Sometimes not in the same way that you thought it should be. Sometimes I have fights with God. I thought you were going to do this. What's wrong with you, God? Don't you see the need? Right? But the fact is, God hears prayer. It does change things. This kind cannot be driven out by anything but prayer. So believe in the prayer, guys. Then at the end of this passage, in chapter 10, right at the end there, we see good old blind Bartimaeus. He'd be a really good guy on a certain game show. You'd have to buy a lot of vowels to spell his name. You ever notice that? Okay, so good old blind Bartimaeus. Bartimaeus addresses Jesus as the Son of David. In doing that, he's saying, you are the Messiah. That's what that meant. And his ask, sitting on the side of the street as a poor blind guy, is, have mercy on me. Jesus actually has to ask him, what is it you actually want? Because he's not saying, cure my blindness. He's saying, have mercy on me, Son of David. Have mercy on me. Maybe he's quoting Psalm 51. Have mercy on me, O my God, according to your steadfast love, according to your great compassion, right? So, have mercy on me, Son of David. This guy's pretty serious. But he's sitting by the side of the road, and everybody's saying, shh, shh, it's Jesus, be quiet, stop bugging the man. And he cried all the louder, have mercy on me, Son of David. Have mercy on me. So Jesus says, call him over. And the man jumps up. Okay? Eagerly, he throws off his cloak and comes running. He's blind now. But I guess he's following the voice. He knows. He knows this is the Son of David. He's headed. He's in. Okay? Now, he's confident that Jesus can restore his sight. What is it you want? I want my sight restored. Why does he believe that? I think he's a deep scholar, and he was reading the footnote in the English Standard Version of the Bible on Isaiah 61:1, where the alternate translation is the opening of the eyes of those who are blind. We see that as the releasing of the captives in the translation we typically read now. But regardless, he knew. He knew this guy could cure him. And maybe since he was calling out, "Have mercy on me," maybe he was a Bible scholar. Maybe he spent a lot of time listening to someone. I don't think they had Braille yet, right? That hadn't been invented. So listening to somebody read to him from Isaiah, from the Psalms. But this is a man who believed. And he was eager. And Jesus does not say, "Gee, you're healed, that's awesome." He gives him his sight and says, "Your faith has made you well." And it says Bartimaeus follows Jesus along the way. So he joins the crowd going to Jerusalem. He's in. He's all in. He was eager. So the other question for you is, would you be a good Bartimaeus? How eager would you be? Do you believe that Jesus can change things in your life? When Jesus calls you, do you jump up and answer the call? He sprang up, is what the ESV translates that as. That's not he struggled, he got up, okay, let me come up. No. I guess I'll try one more time. See if this guy can fix it. I'm going to go get another doctor's opinion tomorrow. No, he believes. He is all in. I would love to say that I'm always that all in. I'm not. Would like to be. Pray for me, right? Let's work on that. But he was all in. So what's the training for the apostles here? This is the on-the-job training they're getting on this journey. They're on their spiritual journey. So we're walking with them. You see the healing of Bartimaeus. What do you learn from this? Learn some faith. It's faith that made you well. Do you learn that it's worthwhile to be able to reference scriptures? Do you learn to just have confidence that Jesus is the man he claims he is? We sing a song, "Jesus Can Fix It." He can. And we sing that like we mean it. But do you pray that like you mean it on Tuesday night when you had a bad day? Or are you looking for worldly fixes? Just say. Okay. So that's the on-the-job training. There were also some miracles that had happened. The journey actually started back in chapter 8. So Bill actually covered some of my miracles last week as well, right? So these guys were getting on-the-job training. The transfiguration itself was on-the-job training. They got to see the power of God in Jesus. Now remember, they're getting ready because they're going to Jerusalem. So let's look at the teaching. So this is going to get a little more interactive, guys, because this teaching is tough and I couldn't figure it all out. So I'm going to ask you questions, okay? That's how that's going to work. So these are some really tough lessons in this section. So first off, greater, deeper teaching and the challenge. So in Mark 9, 30 and 32, and then again in Mark 10, we have Jesus foretells his resurrection, his death, his torturous death, and his resurrection. Now, he had also already done that back in chapter 8. So three times he does that in Mark. So they didn't understand what he was saying. He said, "I'm going to go, I'm going to get killed, and then raised again on the third day." They didn't understand the saying, and they were afraid to ask Jesus what it meant. So why were they afraid? I couldn't come up with the answer, so you have to tell me. Why were they afraid, guys? Any ideas? I mean, you're walking with Jesus for 3 years, and they're afraid to ask him, what do you mean? Yeah.
Is
They might have been afraid for their own, I don't have enough faith to ask this question and really believe it. Yeah?
Afraid of the answer.
This, maybe he's just speaking a parable, but if we ask, he might confirm that this is really going to happen, and I don't want to hear that, right? This is visceral. This is real. Okay? Yeah.
Well.
Yeah. Well, think about it. One chapter ago, he told me this. It's only one chapter later. No, they didn't think in chapters, obviously. There weren't chapters. But you'd think I'd have learned this. You ever been afraid to ask your boss? He gave you the same instructions, and it's like, I don't understand what he means, but I'm not going to ask him. Okay? Okay. So they're afraid to ask. Okay? Now, they're thinking, to your points, thank you, guys, was probably aligned to, you know, the Messiah, the coming back. I'm following him. He's a returning lion. He's the lion, not the lamb here, right? It's going to be David. David was the storied king with all the wealth, and then his son Solomon, right? That's what's coming back. It's going to be this awesome kingdom. We're going to be even bigger than the Romans. We're taking over. And here he is talking about going to Jerusalem and dying. That's not the outcome I had in mind when I started following you, Jesus. Okay? But the world's understanding of this was influencing their thinking. So, thought experiment for you today, and I got to watch the time because I'm going to run out fast. What are some ways the world's influence could change your thinking about Jesus right now? What does the world teach us that may or may not be really the truth from the Bible? So, Bill? Live in the moment. Yep. The world is an awesome place. What are you worried about? Yeah. Sin is acceptable, the bad guys are winning. Right? Okay, just that's normal. Get over it. Right? Yes. Jesus was just a great teacher. All this other stuff is just a mythology that's been built up around him, right? Yeah. Yep. Just accept people. So, and I'm going to cut it off just simply, not, I don't love all your answers, but we have a lot of tough teaching to walk through, so these, you'll have more chances here. But think about it. The world messed with their minds. The Jewish world of the time believed the Messiah was coming back and establishing a big old kingdom. And that was true, but not quite the way they visualized it, right? Oh, didn't mean to do that yet. Okay. See if I can get this back to where I was. Okay. He teaches this in two successive chapters. In chapter 8, he taught this, and Peter pulled him aside and rebuked him. You'll note in the next two times, in 9 and 10, nobody pulls him aside and rebukes him. Now they're afraid, okay? Why do you think he had to repeat himself? Thoughts? Becky? Right.
Because they weren't coming around to Jesus' plan. He had to keep repeating.
Yeah, Jesus taught the same thing three times over and over again because they weren't hearing it. They didn't want it to be true. They didn't want this to be the outcome. Okay? I thought I was on the winning team. And they were, but not the way they thought. Okay. So, I have no idea why that's building that way. Okay. So, another teaching that occurs three different times in three different ways during this journey is, who is the greatest? Humility, humility, humility. Jesus is building a team that's going to go out and change the world. So he's got some team lessons going on. I realize, is this in the way of some of you? We could make that disappear, couldn't we? So we have the technology and almost enough strength. Okay, so who is the greatest? So first, the guys are all walking along behind Jesus and talking among themselves. Who's the greatest? And Jesus has to kind of draw out when they stop. What were you all talking about back there? Oh, nothing. No, really, what were you all talking about? Well, you know, they knew it was wrong. And then he has another instance where he brings a child into the midst. And then, of course, there's James and John. Hey, can we sit on your right and left side when you come into your power? Still showing a slight misconception, perhaps, of what coming into power meant for Jesus. Yeah, are you ready to take this? Are you ready for this, guys? But these overall lessons, Jesus knew they were arguing about this. So, first question, why would that conversation that Jesus, of course, knew about, being omniscient, why would that conversation have concerned him? Why did he come back and address that when they stopped for the evening or whatever? Any ideas? What's the importance of coming back and talking about, why were you talking about who was the greatest? Because, okay, so Jesus was the greatest, not you guys, but Jesus is also a servant, and I like that servant idea. Other thoughts? Yes? If Jesus is really about to leave, which one of us is going to be in charge once he's gone? We've got to figure out the successor planning, right? Yeah. Yes, George. Yeah. Yep. Okay, so whoever does not receive the kingdom of God like a child shall not enter it. And we're short, very short on time, so I'm not going to get answers here. But how does a child, as example, influence our humility, our servant leadership? Think about that. Because two of these instances, he pulls a child into the picture. And if anyone would be first, he must be the last and the servant of all. Here's the tough question. How does that work for you guys in your family groups? How does that work for you and your family? How does that work for you on the job? Are you trying to out-serve the people around you? Or are you trying to delegate and appoint others to serve? And delegation isn't an evil thing. But how does that work? And how does that service, the servant leadership, relate and support unity? If you're worried about who's the greatest, is that a good formula for a unified group? If you're trying to all serve one another, how's that work for a unified group? Jesus was very worried about the unity of the team. So, see if we can make the rest of that. Sorry, too many buttons. Anyone who is not against us is for us. How dare some other group go out and cast out demons? And Jesus says, you know, they're not against us. Why are you worrying about that? Think about for us again. And we'll turn these to thought questions for lack of time. But think about that. Do you look at other groups, other people doing good things? Is your thought, awesome, that's a great thing, I'm glad it's happening? Or is your thought, wait, that's my job. They're not allowed to do that. Okay? You know? Are we acting jealous of good deeds, or are we supporting what's good? You know? That's not a replacement for a true gospel, a true theology, a truth about Jesus. But Jesus doesn't get disappointed that someone was healed. Right? Okay. So, here's a tough teaching. We use this one when we study the Bible with people. Cut off the hand, cut off the foot, tear out the eye if it causes you to sin. Why would Jesus be so graphic and violent? I mean, that's like PG-13 or worse. You know? How did he get there? That might even be R-rated. I don't know. I mean, that's terrible. That's violent. And then he speaks of hell, Gehenna, calling up where they burned children as a sacrifice, where the fire is unquenchable. He says, that's where people are headed. Isn't that kind of mean? Politically incorrect? Shouldn't we be, I'm okay, you're okay, everybody's okay? Jesus has a very tough teaching here. Is he just making a point? Or is he telling you the truth? He can be graphic and violent because he's headed into a graphic and violent situation in Jerusalem any minute now. He's preparing them. And then the final question there, if you've lost your saltiness, how do you get salty again? I think that has something to do with God. Just at a guess. Divorce. Let's spend 30 seconds on one of the most controversial topics in the Bible, right? Anyway, if you have really deep questions on divorce, I highly recommend talking to our leadership and elders. I'm not going to try to address that here. But divorce is a touchy subject back then as much as it is now. And what Jesus focuses on is the marriage. The two become one. Let's respect the sanctity of the marriage. Okay? So, this was a difficult thing. Why is divorce a significant issue to Jesus? Because he knows the plan for God's marriage, right? Does the world influence our thinking about divorce? Does the world influence our thinking about marriage? Do we dare let it? Or can we keep coming back to God's view of marriage? Okay? Plain and simple, that's what it is. We don't agree with the world if we're based in the Bible on that and many other topics. That's a challenging thing. Most of us in this room have fallout in one form or another. I have a daughter who's been divorced twice. Okay? You know, that I don't like that. How do I deal with that? How do I reconcile that to a biblical view? Right? So, this is, I don't want to trivialize this. This is important stuff. But go back to Jesus' teaching. He's training the guys on their journey to Jerusalem. It's the spiritual journey. And finally, because I am out of time, go sell all that you have and give to the poor, the rich young man. He jumps right past all of the things the guy says, I've done that since I was a youth. I've maintained all the commandments since I was a youth. How many of you can claim that in this room? Not me, no. Okay. My guess is he's lying, but Jesus doesn't approach that. Jesus doesn't dispute that. Jesus just says, let's go past that. All you have to do is give up everything you have, sell it, give the money to the poor, and follow me. And the guy goes away sad. Right? For me, one of the top teachings, and I taught this when I teach about money. Y'all have heard this, anyone who's talked to me about money. Wealth ends up possessing us instead of us possessing wealth. It starts controlling your thinking. I've got something and I don't want to lose it. It's mine. Okay? Beware that. And Jesus is calling that out as this can keep you out of the kingdom. Again, more tough teaching. What the world's teaching you is whoever dies with the most toys wins, right? God is saying, that's not the way it works. So, a very spiritual journey. Preparing the apostles, evidence of the miracles, and the challenges in the teaching. On-the-job training and formal training, teaching. Next week, he's going to finish the journey to Jerusalem, and we'll go into Jerusalem with him. Okay. So I got a really cool picture of that, I thought. Anyway, so we are out of time, past time. I'm in trouble. So go get your kids really fast and make up for my lost time. Thank you all.